before I start the meeting, I want to make sure everybody got the packet Vicki sent out Friday. Yep.
I do.
Great. Yeah, I'm all set and ready to go.
All right, so let's call the meeting to order. The first point of business is approval of the minutes.
This is Doug. I'll move approval of the minutes.
All right. I'll second it. So it's been approved and seconded. Any discussion or about the minutes? All right. Seeing none. All those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Josh.
All right. The minutes are approved. The next item is approval of the loans. There was a longer list of loans today, and this is something that Rich talked with us about last meeting because the rates went down a little bit. We were expecting a few more loans this go around. Rich, any updates on the loans?
No, these are all fairly standard. The only one I might point to is the last one, Shawano County, just because counties generally will go to the bond market, and so we might be able to anticipate that this is a shorter-term loan that they're using for construction of their facilities and that eventually we may be taken out by the bond market. Now, they went for a little longer term, probably to keep our loan in the back pocket so that they don't have to go to the bond market unless the, you know, if market conditions change. But I wouldn't expect that to be in our portfolio for more than a few years.
Yeah, this is Doug. I was pleased to see a lot of loans. I'll move the adoption of the 12 loans for about $7.8
million. Seconded. Any discussion? Just a question, Rich. Now that we've lowered our rates, have there been a lot more people calling about the loans or...
I don't know that it's been a huge uptick, but we are on pace with last year's number of loans and quantity of loans. And so I think that it's picked up a little bit. I think what really happened is that once we lowered rates, everybody that had already submitted applications wanted to redo them at the lower rate, almost everybody. And so that's one of the things that happens when we lower rates is that because we don't have any application fees or any other costs involved, it's a relatively simple and costless process for them to just start over again, and so that's what happens.
Can I say something? We'll get to this in your report. This is Jonathan, Rich, but did not the treasuries drop down a little bit shortly after we lowered our rates again and then stabilized?
Yeah, what happened is that, you know, I think that the 10-year treasury was at about 2.6% when we lowered our rates the last time. Shortly thereafter, they went down to 2.35. We sold some bonds to take advantage of that situation. Rates ramped back up to about 2.6, and now they're, you know, it's a very volatile market. They're back down to about 2.46 today. So, it's a volatile market. We try to take advantage of that when we can. And we try to maintain our loan program interest rates in conjunction with that market. When it bounces around that much, it's a little we're a little more stable than the market is, and so we take into consideration the long-term expectations for rate changes before we move on any rate changes.
So, Rich, the other thing that you mentioned was we were on track to replicate what we did last year. So, how many loans did we give last year, and what was that amount?
Okay, let's vote on these loans and keep going here.
I can get to that information.
Okay.
I don't have, you know, I usually put that off before a board meeting, but I did not do that today. But that's certainly available and something I keep track of.
Okay.
I just don't want to speak out of turn.
Okay, appreciate that. All right, so it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of approving the loan, say aye.
Aye, Doug.
Aye.
Aye, Josh.
Okay, so the loans have been approved. Moving down to old business, talking about the unclaimed property program from kind of the DOR to the state treasurer's office. So I met with with Jenny, I'm not, can't remember Jenny's last name.
Vandermeusen.
Yes, Vandermeusen, it sounds like. On Thursday, basically the feedback from Jenny was that because it doesn't articulate that my office can specifically look at what the unclaimed property, you know, I'm purely supposed to be promoting, and even though it's hard for me to promote what I don't know, that doesn't necessarily give me the authority to potentially audit that. But one of the things that we really wanted to kind of delve further in was with regards to, okay, so if DOR is processing all of these unclaimed property claims, I'm supposed to be promoting it. What is the link as fiduciaries of the Common School Fund with regard to knowing how much money we're actually supposed to be bringing in through the unclaimed property program to the Common School Fund? It's hard for us to forecast or to know that if we don't know what the unclaimed property is. So as a fiduciary, what is that linkage to the unclaimed property program? And we didn't get any answers on that. And I don't know. Tom, I know that this is something that BCPL has potentially looked at in the past.
We have. So when they made the move back in 2014 to move unclaimed property program to the Department of Revenue, there were some things that they really didn't look closely at that time. And so in most states, unclaimed property that's not reunited with its rightful owner just goes to the general fund. But Wisconsin is among a very select number of states that is directing that unclaimed property to education, to a separate trust fund, to the Common School Fund. And so here we have a situation where the unclaimed property at the end of the chain is supposed to go to the Common School Fund, but none of the entities that are responsible for managing the Common School Fund have any oversight until the money actually gets in there. So in most other states, the state treasurer's office actually plays a part in overseeing unclaimed property. And in a number of other states, the treasurer also plays a role in managing the permanent school fund. Here, we have a treasurer who is designated by the Constitution to be part of the board overseeing the Common School Fund. But again, in Wisconsin, we have a statutory structure where neither the treasurer does not oversee the program, nor has any statutory role in managing that stream of revenue until it gets into the fund.
Well, Tom, let me interrupt. But the treasurer had that role before it was moved, correct?
You are absolutely right, Doug.
Let me expedite this conversation. The reason I have been wanting to discuss this is not to hear all that history, which I think we all know, but to find out if we can ask a couple of legislators and check with Peter Barker first to introduce a very simple piece of legislation that would restore things to the way they were before 2014. And that's what I want to do, if my fellow board members will agree with me.
That would be one solution.
It's the most obvious solution, and it solves the issue, but it also gives the state treasurer some important responsibility, which they should have.
In my opinion, it doesn't solve the whole problem, because not only did the program get moved to DOR, but subsequently the legislature adopted another law that prevented the administrator of the unclaimed property program of using third-party auditors. There was nothing in the budget the last couple of years for position or budget for having in-house auditing, and by the legislature passing a law that prohibits third-party outside auditors, in essence, what the legislature has done is paint the program into a corner in terms of its ability to locate unclaimed property and bring that property through the program. And so,
but that would be true no matter whether it stays in revenue or goes to the state treasurer, right?
That is correct, and that's why I'm saying that by just moving the program, you're only solving part of the problem. I think.
That's the part that has to do with who has the authority over it. Let's assume we could get it moved to the treasurer. Then the next step would be to try to resolve the auditing issue. We could try to do them both at the same time, but it might be more expedient to get it moved, and then the treasurer would be, and the rest of the board would be strong advocates for changing the audit procedure. And that's what I think would be the best approach. Because once it's in the Department of Revenue is a big mess, and no one knows what's going on. If the state treasurer had this responsibility again, the state treasurer has the time, if you will, and the interest in dealing with that. And I'm sure the Attorney General and the Secretary of State, at the moment anyway, would support her in trying to deal with the audit issue with the legislature and the governor. So that strikes me as a good approach, and I'd like to do it, and if you two will agree with me. Josh, what do you think?
So I guess my thought is that as a first step, it may make sense for, I'm not sure who the meeting should be between, but perhaps staff at the BCPL and staff at DOR, or I'd certainly be happy if Sarah wanted to meet with Peter Barca to discuss, DOR's position on these issues and whether that's a move that they support. I think that would be a good first step to figure out whether DOR has a view on this, and if so, if they're inclined, to work, potentially to work with, on a solution to these issues.
I think that's okay. Even if they are not excited about this, I still think from a political perspective, we should go ahead and try to do it. I mean, the state treasurer campaigned on the issue of keeping that office, and the people voted to do that. Then she campaigned and got elected on the issue of restoring the duties. So why in the hell don't we do it?
I am all in favor of moving the program back. However, I think in terms of getting there, I think you probably need to take a little bit more of a strategic dive on this. When I had talked to the state treasurer, one of the things I brought up is maybe someone like Dave Meaney at DOJ could assist on a look into the path backwards, because of the fact that we have a legislature and a governor of different parties, and right now we're encountering a great deal of gridlock, and there may be some additional legal analysis that can be applied to this to make a more compelling case for making any moves.
Can I say something? Doug, this is Jonathan. I really appreciate where you're coming from, and I understand in the recent campaign that the now treasurer, Sarah, articulated a desire and the logic of the treasurer having substantive duties. It seems to me that we also have to look at the basis of that move back in 2014. Parts of it actually made sense, and we're among most states now where the Department of Revenue has the process part of it that matches income tax filers with unclaimed property and does that very well compared to what the Treasury used to do at the state fair. I'm exaggerating. So that part probably or arguably could stay there, but what is missing is the effective oversight of the unclaimed property program, as Tom said, by someone who is attached to the Common School Fund's welfare. And I believe that some of those positions probably should be transferred over to the Treasurer's Office from the Department of Revenue, And so I concur with you, Josh, that that's an order that we ought to really have a meeting with Peter Barca. And Tom is right. Meany can be very helpful in the analysis of what to ask for and what is supported under the statutes today. Having said all that, getting a legislature to do something politically right now in this environment is going to be tough. But getting them to do the right thing that makes sense on the merits may be less so.
Well, this is Doug. I mean, as the person who has been pushing this, and I apologize if I'm pushing too hard, I agree with what Josh said, and I agree with what you just said. My only reason for being a little agitated is we haven't started doing it. So I would, I mean, let's go ahead and call Peter Barca and make an appointment, and you and Tom and the treasurer go over there and meet with him and ask someone in the Justice Department to do some of the thinking that Josh mentioned. I think Josh mentioned it, or Tom did, and let's get going.
So,
this is Sarah, the state treasurer.
I'm going to chime in on my office right now because I feel like everybody else can talk around me, and I'm actually the elected official in this position. So, here's where I am on this issue, and I appreciate everybody's support and advocacy, but it's a very, very political issue that if we don't do it appropriately, it's going to die on the vine. That's why we need to be very smart, and that's why we can't just be a bull in a china shop, because we're going to fail. I want us to succeed. I don't want us to fail. So, in knowing that and knowing the political environment, here is two things that I, as a state treasurer, am okay to talk about right now. I am not comfortable with moving forward with legislation because I don't think that that's going to pass. I think that we're going to be setting ourselves up for failure, and I don't think that that is the way to go. There is a reason why I've been meeting with over 50 legislators in the past 100 days is to build relationships, because that's what actually passes legislation. And so that is what I'm working on. That being said, I have no problem doing two things. One is I will meet with Peter Barca. I have talked with him about this before, and we can touch base on kind of what this looks like. The second thing that I am willing to do, and Josh, this is obviously with your support as well, is I do think it would be helpful to have an attorney that can bring together both, I think, the legal aspect of which I am dealing with, as well as the policy piece, because I think that's what's been missing in the past, is I need somebody who understands this very unique intersection between policy and the legal side of it, and I've been told that Dave Meany is a very good reference in bringing those two worlds together. So I have no problem talking to Dave to kind of brainstorm this out and pull all this together. But I do not want to rush this, because I think that that's political suicide, and I'm not willing to do that. So I think that this is an important issue. I'm absolutely committed to fighting for the Common School Fund, but I want to do that in a smart way that's going to benefit Wisconsinites and the Common School Fund, and to do that, we have to be smart.
Okay, this is Doug. I'll say one more thing. Sarah, I think you're too pessimistic about the chances of it passing. But that being said, it's your office and you were elected to it, so I will defer to you. That being said, I'm not going to shut up. I will not bring this issue up again. I'll just wait to hear from you all about what's happened. Okay? Thank you very much.
So, I'm incredibly...
Next item on the agenda.
No, I've got to go... I want to make sure, Doug, we're okay with the next steps in this, because it's important to me and it's important to the Common School Fund. So I will talk to Peter about this. I think, Josh, is there a way that I can connect with Dave Meany about this?
No, Dave Meany is not at DOJ anymore. What I was going to suggest is... to the extent that there are legal and policy issues that BCPL has worked on with respect to BCPL issues, I think they're the ones who probably have the best knowledge as to the way in which this affects BCPL. When it comes to the authority of the state treasurer's office, again, that's something I think, Sarah, it's absolutely appropriate for you to follow up with DOJ in your capacity as state treasurer regarding. But, it depends on the nature of the issue, I guess.
Okay, so, Josh, I think the other person that people mentioned that, again, I think has this good intersection of policy and legal is Charlie. So I guess that's who I need to follow up with.
Well, let me, I guess the question is what the goal is. Is the theory is the hope here to ultimately have a statute drafted, or that would make some of these changes we've been discussing? I guess I'm sort of wondering what the output is.
What I was trying to articulate before, Josh, was that in order to make the change, I think we really need to have a full, robust reason for making that change. And as I was talking with the state treasurer earlier, the concern that we were talking about was how does the board fulfill its fiduciary responsibility with respect to a stream of revenue that you only see the tail end of it? And so how do we do things in a way that makes a compelling legal argument for the legislature to go along with that? And that's where we started talking about, okay, with the legal skills and the policy analysis skills to assist with that.
Well, I guess my question is whether it seems like a policy argument, which is currently we don't have oversight in terms of the process for making sure that unclaimed funds have been appropriately collected, and why shouldn't there be? Isn't the answer to that to have an officer who's part of DCPL involved in the oversight process?
I agree that it starts with the policy question, but then the question morphs into a legal question in terms of then what steps do you have to take to be able to get that appropriate oversight?
Well, so I guess, is the answer not just that we need a statutory change?
We do need a statutory change, but it just seemed to me that we probably needed to develop a very robust rationale for that going forward.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, BCPL obviously has the best institutional knowledge with respect to this background.
Sorry, somebody has, background noise, so whoever, can you go and mute your phone? Thank you.
I was going to say, BCPL certainly has, I think, the strong institutional knowledge, and so I guess one question I have is whether we ought to have the BCPL staff, I don't know what sort of document we ultimately want, but an explanation for the background of this and why a change is important to BCPL. That would be my thought as to how to proceed, But Sarah, I'm curious if what your thought is or what the BCPL team's thought is. Or Doug.
I'm just looking at the BCPL team because I know they've gone down this path many different times, so I'm just looking for... I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I want to make sure we do things that make the most amount of sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. If there's something that's been done already, I would be interested to see that.
When the statutory change was first proposed, Josh, BCPL folks weighed in on their concerns about it, and in fact testified at the hearing for the legislation, and we did not carry the day. And so I guess what I was preferring is that we would have someone that we could work with at DOJ just to make sure that we're all on the same page on this matter.
Contact BSW 60. Who's the call?
call.
That must be Doug.
Sorry, there's some noise in the background.
Yeah, Doug, can you mute your phone, please?
Okay. Josh, it's Jonathan. I hear what you're saying, and it makes sense. It seems to me that the issue is really...
I'm out in front of your house right now.
Doug, can you put your phone on mute, please?
Goodness, he's walking around. I guess I'm okay with it. Let's follow what Sarah suggested. I think it's the issue of the authority of the state treasurer's position that needs the oversight. It's the fiduciary responsibility of the board that I think is sort of not being honored here. And so I kind of disagree with you slightly, Josh, that this is a BCPL staff thing. We can vet it and research it, but it really has to be advanced on the strength of the treasurer's authority.
And I think that's where, I mean, there's my bucket, right, and we've kind of talked about that at length today. I think the second bucket is, what is our responsibility as a fiduciary of the Common School Fund and understanding the linkage, knowing that's a primary revenue stream into the Common School Fund. And we know that it's been decreasing, but we don't know what that's going to look like forecast in the future. Doug, can you please mute your phone? Doug? So I think that's the piece, honestly, Josh, that I think we do potentially need some DOJ assistance in this fiduciary responsibility with regard to the Common School Fund and that linkage to unclaimed property.
So the just so I understand, the question that the group is raising is whether whether there's a belief that the fiduciary obligations that BCPL has basically mean that the state treasurer has implied authority to audit the fund?
Yeah.
We would agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I have not looked at this, but I can tell you my initial reaction, which is that if statute is clear that the only DOR can audit its own funds, I mean that's a clear statutory ruling on that issue, which is more specific as to that issue than the general fiduciary obligation, and would typically control.
So this, I think, is the challenge, Josh, with there is no statutes about auditing this, and there's just, there's nothing about it, period. That's, I think, the challenge.
So it sounds like this is a follow-on question, sort of, to the one you originally asked, Sarah, about the treasurer's audit authority. Is that right?
I think it goes back to not just audit authority, but the fiduciary responsibility, because to me that is a primary driver. I mean, I think about when I'm a fiduciary, whether it's for my corporate board responsibilities or for my investment funds, it's everything from ensuring the effective growth to managing and predicting forecasting of that information, of what those finances can be. And to me, as a fiduciary, I'm concerned that one of our primary revenue sources, we don't have clear insight in what that's going to look like, how we can effectively manage those potential ebbs and flows. It's just a big black box. And so as fiduciaries, how can we kind of unveil that in a way to ensure that we best manage the public's money?
Can I give you an example? This is Jonathan, Josh. I recently sold a business of mine, and I won't go into names, and in closing down the business, we discovered, not surprisingly, we had a bunch of uncashed payroll checks from employees over the last several years. So we went through all of those, believing that we had an obligation to do so, notified everybody that the statute said we should, as we understood it, And then when we couldn't identify it, we voluntarily sent in a sum of money to the Department of Revenue for unclaimed property. Well, there was no enforcement at all. The statutes say I'm supposed to do it, but we know full well there's no enforcement. And the body politic out there now realizes, with the last legislation prohibiting third-party audits, the fact that there's no funding in DOR for any auditing internally, that this is not required to be followed unless you'd be breaking the law, but you don't have to follow it. We chose, of course, not to do that. But I think we can predict that this fund is going to decline, and the Department of Revenue is operating under a statute that they have no enforcement authority to implement, and that's wrong.
From a policy standpoint, trying to get some sort of change that either gave BCPL or the Treasurer's Office audit authority makes sense to me. So pursuing the sort of legislative change avenue, the logic of that makes sense. But what we're talking about here is whether there's some sort of implied authority to audit that's held by, Sarah, you're talking about the state treasurer. I mean, it's the board as a whole that is responsible for the fund, so arguably it's the board as a whole that has the audit authority if you're to go down that path. I mean, that's the type of thing you're talking about right now. Am I right in understanding that?
Yeah, I think it goes back to, there's, general rules that we're given as executive officers, right? Josh, we can have task forces. We can sign proclamations. We can sign MOUs as executives. Those aren't necessarily in statute, but it is, as an executive officer of the state of Wisconsin, we are given this authority. I think the same thing is true with as a fiduciary for taxpayer dollars. What are these kind of responsibilities that we just assume as fiduciaries in managing this money?
I understand the issue. So let me do this. Let me follow up at our next meeting on in terms of sort of what both what sort of makes sense for DOJ to weigh in on, and to the extent there is an issue there, and hopefully to sort of respond to the question of whether there's an argument that there's authority either by the board or the treasurer in connection with the fiduciary role to conduct some sort of audit.
That's great, Josh. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a separate question of where the funding, where the payment for the audit would come from.
Yeah.
I mean, I think part of that could be program revenue, because we do have, there is a significant PR account aligned to unclaimed property. Okay. So I think that makes sense. So, Josh, you'll circle back with kind of this larger legal question, and then I will circle back on my conversation with Peter. Okay. Check off our old business. Moving on to some new business. So we have the board's endorsement of the governor's budget for BCPL. So, Jonathan, do you want to walk us through that?
Needless to say, this last week, the Legislature Finance Committee took the policy items out of the budget. Now, I don't know why they took the treasurer's initiatives out of the budget, but they did that as well. But I think, nevertheless, what the board would be doing by a motion to endorse the governor's budget as it pertains to BCPL, and respectfully request that a gifts and grants line be added, is simply to just say we support the status quo, plus we'd like a gifts and grants line added to the BCPL budget, because then we'll go and lobby our friends in the legislature, pointing out that we have this opportunity periodically and now right in front of us to get a gifts and grant that will help us map all of our roads, which would otherwise be very expensive. And it'll also improve access to the general public, and it's altogether a good thing. So that would be the motion that we'd suggest that you consider adopting. You want me to repeat the motion?
No, I think the motion makes sense. It's just to ask for a gifts and grants appropriation line. Josh, I don't know if you have talked to the governor's budget, to anybody. I don't know who you liaise with the governor's office, but I mean, I know from my end, I would just want to make sure we talk to them about this at some point.
You want to delay this and talk to them before then somehow?
I mean, that's where I am on it, Josh. I don't know what.
I don't have a strong view either way, Sarah. If you're interested in talking to the governor's office about it, I think that's fine. Or the concept here would be basically just to endorse the portion of the governor's budget that relates to BCPL, right?
It would be to endorse it with this motion of adding a gifts and grants line.
I think the sensitivity is, I didn't think about this, Josh, is that normally the governor's office asks agencies not to make any suggestions for change. And so we perhaps should vet that with somebody in the budget shop before we make that suggestion. Is that what you're coming from? I would agree with that. We can delay this motion until that contact has been made.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I would add is that Joint Finance Committee is going to be taking up the budget very soon. And so I don't know. I mean, I totally defer to whatever approach you all think is best in terms of whether to weigh in now or to wait until after the Joint Finance Committee budget is out, and we can at that point we could respond to both that and the governor's budget.
Right.
Or the board could take the position today that they endorse the governor's budget proposal, and they will take the issue of a gifts and grants line under consideration for a future meeting.
I mean, I would be okay with that if we want to do something. I'm okay with that.
So that way, what the board is doing is in keeping perfectly with the governor's budget proposal.
Right.
And you're saying, well, we need a little bit more time to look at this, and perhaps a time for the governor's office to consider it.
So my preference would be that if we think we want to add a gifts and grants suggestion, that we say that at the same time we weigh in on the budget. My thought would be that, you know, having either, you know, Sarah or the BCPL, someone from the BCPL staff raise the issue to the governor's office is fine with me, and or just waiting until the legislature's budget comes out and then commenting on both. But I think having one statement that articulates our position makes the most sense.
So I think let's just postpone this to maybe the next BCPL meeting.
That makes sense to me.
All right, so that was 5 and 6. So then moving down to routine business, the Chief Investment Officer's report. Rick.
We'll try to keep this short and sweet. Every quarter I had been providing, for many years, I had been providing a quarterly performance summary of the investment portfolios to the board. That encompassed the entire fixed income portfolio. And it always, you know, and it had shown for many years that we had been outperforming our benchmarks. And one thing that I was curious about is how much of that outperformance was due because we have this trust fund loan program available to us, which we know provides excess risk-adjusted returns to the portfolio. And so what I wanted to do is split that off and see how the remainder of the portfolio compared. And when I did that, it showed an exhibit or attachment one. It showed that it's true. It confirmed that the trust fund loan program delivers excess returns, in fact, by a factor of 1.21%, which is pretty extraordinary. When looking at only the public bond portfolio against our benchmark, that also exceeded its benchmark by 0.73%. which is also quite good. When you're talking about X percent above the benchmark, it doesn't really bring anything home. And so what I wanted to do is quantify those numbers for our beneficiaries. And so what I did is I calculated in theory what our distribution would be relative to our current distribution if we had only earned those benchmark returns. And what would happen is that our distribution, annual distribution, would be decreased by $8.7 million. And so I guess what that all means is that we're doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the attachments 1 and 2, you know, just go through the math on that calculation. Attachment 3 is just the investment transaction report.
Can I say something, Rich?
Oh, sure.
This is a totally legitimate way to look at this. Any firm would be hired to invest money would be graded against a benchmark.
Right.
I just want to thank you for doing this. This
and,
is,
and I do believe that
really
the,
helpful.
Thank you. The taxable municipal bond index is the best benchmark for us because that's what we're investing in with the loan program and with a lot of our bond portfolio. And so what you want to do is have the benchmark be as closely replicated to what you're actually investing in as you possibly can. You know, I did make some adjustments because there are some differences in the maturity of the benchmark and in the credit quality of the benchmark compared to what we're investing in. But you can see the differences. You can see the differences between our portfolio and the benchmark before and after those adjustments.
Thank you.
It's been pretty quiet around here, except for the last couple of days. The stock market has been continuing to climb. But, you know, the last couple of days, I did buy some stocks this morning because of the dip, and I think that's probably a pretty good policy. The investment committee concurs that we should continue to dip our toes in that market when good opportunities come about. We need to continue the diversification process, but we want to do it at the appropriate entry points when we can. And then the last two attachments were just the current status of our bond and stock portfolios, which you can see in compared to the last quarter. And that's all I've got. Does anybody have any questions on any of that or on any of the attachments?
No, I just want to say, Rich, and kind of echo what Jonathan said, that this is all really great information and showing kind of, again, how well managed these public funds are. And that's something that I think we can work on in the future is communicating to our beneficiaries about the effective management. I think that's an opportunity for improvement on our end to communicate this out to our larger stakeholders.
Thank you. One of the things that I want to include in future reports is a comparison of our ETF equity portfolios against their benchmarks. And I'm working within our Portfolio Center portfolio management system in order to be able to do that in the future. So hopefully we can straighten that out.
That's great. Okay. If there's no questions for Rich, I'll move it on to Jonathan's report.
I've only got two things I want to bring up in the interest of brevity. First is a heads up that the Western States Land Commissioners Convention or conference is taking place in Montana this year, and it takes place at the end of July and the first part of August for about a five-day period. We typically send 3 to 4 people to this, including a board member, I just wanted to make a heads up because this is a relatively expensive conference given that the location. Last year, the conference was held in Duluth, and we were a co-sponsor, so the costs were a little bit more modest. I think it's possible that this could reach or exceed the $5,000 threshold in the aggregate of all persons going, and I will develop a budget, Tom and I will, and we've already decided that if we're going to this, we're going to try and rent some condos rather than the headquarters hotel, which is just prohibitively expensive in Whitefish, Montana. And we think we can reduce the cost. The second thing I want to bring up, totally different subject, and that is that we've been having some meetings with companies or firms that do due diligence on venture capital investments and have met with SWIB and others and have concluded that we really must do due diligence on any venture capital investment. And the smaller the investment, perhaps the lower the cost, but there will be a real cost for doing third-party due diligence. but it's incumbent on us as a to protect our board and the fact that it's a public fund to have a third-party vetting. And so the recent generator approval remains in place. We expect to be able to conduct due diligence with an appropriate firm within a reasonable period of time and then move forward with that investment. But and I'll give you a report, or Tom or and I will give you a report on due diligence and the report that comes thereby on these investments. It's different than investing in the open market because these are quite illiquid investments for venture capital, and I think it's important for as public money and for a fiduciary board to have such third-party due diligence analysis. And everybody in our investment committee is in agreement on that. That's the end of my report.
Great. Thanks, Jonathan. And I was actually going to mention the due diligence, so that part is checked off. I think it's an important topic that the other board members know that we're looking at with regards to kind of how we are ensuring that this money is being invested wisely. And nothing else to report now. I think there's a lot of things that are exciting in the hopper, both from the investment committee and things on the land side, but I think we can share that once we have more information.
All right, I've got to go somewhere, so it can be moved to adjourn pretty soon.
Well, I think I just want to make sure that there's no other future agenda items, Doug, so I don't want to cut people off. Any other future agenda items for our next board meeting?
None for me.
Okay. Seeing none, there's been a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
I second.
Great. It's been moved and seconded. So all those in favor of adjournment, say aye.
Aye, Doug.
Aye.
Thanks, Rich, for all his good work already. Bye-bye,
thanks,
everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Stay well.